Why? I heard a story about an older man who lived here in town, in Simcoe, and it was early springtime, and he wanted us to spade or work up his potato garden. But it was hard work, and he just didn't have the strength physically to do it. His only son, who would have helped him with this task, was in prison on a serious charge, and there was no way he was going to get out to come and help. So the old man wrote a letter to his son, and he mentioned his situation to him. "Dear son, I'm feeling pretty bad because it looks like I won't be able to plant my potato garden this year. I hate to miss doing the garden because your mom always loved planting time. I'm getting too old to be digging up the garden plot. If you were here, all my troubles would be over. I know you would dig the plot for me if you weren't in prison. Love, Dad." Shortly after this, shortly after he had sent the letter to his son, he received this telegram. "For heaven's sake, Dad, don't dig up the garden. That's where I buried the weapons." At 4 a.m. the next morning, a dozen RCMP officers and the local police officers showed up at the old man's house and dug up the entire garden without finding any weapons at all. Confused, the old man wrote another note to his son explaining what had happened, and he asked him, "Well, what do I do next?" And the son's reply was, "Go ahead and plant your potatoes, Dad. That's the best I can do from here." You know, I've always admired people who can think outside the box and come up with ingenious solutions to difficult problems. As a philosophy student at the University of Guelph, I was always intrigued with the whole subject of logic. And I know I'm not alone in my interest in such matters of logic. Almost every day, one of us, or maybe all of us, ask a question in regard to a situation we have seen, and it just puzzles us. Why? Why did this happen? What is her or his motivation here? Now, it might be a genetic thing, perhaps, because who hasn't had a child in their lives hit the age of about 4 and begin to endure you with almost an endless repetition, "But why, Mommy? Why, Daddy?" We also understand, don't we, the uselessness of the answer "because." Because it leaves the child unsatisfied with our answer. What we often do not tell the child is that when we answer with the word "because," it's because we don't fully understand the answer ourselves. We find out that we too want to know why. As we grow older, the questions about why something happened, they become a lot deeper. They become more challenging to answer. And just as with our children, the answers we sometimes receive, they leave us unsatisfied, don't they? Good Friday is, among many things, a day when some of the biggest questions of life, they haunt us. This day can really puzzle us, and maybe that's why some people just avoid this day altogether, and, well, they'll just wait for Easter Sunday. Today marks the day when many people who are skeptical about the Christian faith like to throw out their biggest objections to Christianity, and they throw it right in our face. Why? Why was it necessary for Jesus to go to the cross? Maybe you're not aware that Gandhi actually admired Jesus a great deal. He wrote about it a lot. He wrote about this in his own autobiography. He said this: "I could accept Jesus as a martyr, the embodiment of a sacrifice, and a divine teacher. His death on the cross was a great example to the world, but that there is anything like a mysterious or miraculous virtue in it, my heart cannot accept it." The reality is that since the cross is the central symbol of our faith and the crucifixion is at the heart of the gospel, we can't just toss it away. Nor can we avoid the hard questions of why. At the heart of the criticism of the crucifixion is the idea, well, if God is so loving and forgiving, why did he demand this sacrifice at all? The sacrifice of his son. I even read once a liberal Protestant theologian who referred to the crucifixion as a kind of divine child abuse of all things. So is there an adequate answer to the question of why? Why did Jesus have to die in such a terrible way? It is difficult in a time we have today to give a full accounting of all the arguments that many fine scholars have put forth on this subject. However, I am indebted to a gentleman by the name of Timothy Keller and his book, The Reason for God. Keller's first idea is to think of the question of why the cross in an economic way. Imagine, he says, that a neighbor of yours has backed out of his driveway and he has hit your fence, the fence between your yard and his yard, and he's just wrecked the gate of your fence. You discover that your house insurance does not cover such damage. Therefore, you have two options. The first is that you demand that your neighbor pay for the damage. The second is that you refuse to let him pay anything and you absorb the cost yourself. Well, there's also a middle ground, isn't there, where you share the cost. But notice Keller says that in every case of a solution, the cost of the damage has to be borne by someone. Either you or your neighbor or maybe even both have to bear the cost of the damage. Even if you forgive him, the debt doesn't just vanish into thin air. Forgiveness in this illustration means bearing the cost of your neighbor's misdeed against yourself. Now we all understand that not all wrongs our experience can be seen in just purely economic terms. Sometimes someone has hurt us by damaging our reputation or ruining an opportunity for us or taking away some aspect of our freedom. And it's really difficult to put a value on such things, although the courts sometimes try. Yet, even if we cannot put a dollar amount on an injury we have sustained, we still carry in us a sense that the perpetrator has incurred a debt that must be dealt with. I think it's very possible that the greater the hurt, the greater our sense that we need that debt redress somehow. In this situation, we can seek to make the perpetrator suffer for what they've done to us. We can withhold a relationship or actively or even passively look for ways to punish them. In our efforts to pay them back, we think that we're somehow rebalancing the scales. However, this approach, it has serious side effects, doesn't it? You can, over time, in seeking recompense, become harder, colder. You can become more self-centered. You can transfer some of your hurt feelings over to an entire group of the one that hurt you in the first place. That's how prejudice is born, by the way. There's a real possibility of an escalation as the perpetrator decides you've hurt them too much, so they're going to hurt you back. And so on, and so on, and so on. That's how blood feuds happen, by the way. Just ask the Hatfields and McCoys. There is another option, though. You can forgive. Forgiveness means refusing to let them pay you what they owe you or what they have done to you. However, to forgive someone by refusing to lash out or retaliate is agony. It's suffering. Not only do you suffer from the original harm, but you forego the consolation of inflicting some harm on them. You are absorbing the debt, and boy, does it hurt. You all know that. Some may say it even feels, believe it or not, like death. One person who understood the suffering involved in forgiveness, perhaps as much as anyone, was Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Bonhoeffer returned to Germany to resist Hitler, and it cost him his life. In his famous book, The Cost of Discipleship, Bonhoeffer reported that forgiveness always involves suffering. He wrote in part, "My brother's burden, which I must bear, is not only his outward lot, his natural characteristics and gifts, but quite literally his sin. And the only way to bear that sin is by forgiving it in the power of the cross of Christ, which I now share. Forgiveness is the Christ-like suffering, which it is the Christian's duty to bear." Bonhoeffer lived out his words by confronting the evil of his home country, Germany. It was not cheap grace, as he called it. It was also costly because he refused to hate. He passed through the agonizing process required to love your enemies. Bonhoeffer would say that he was simply living out what Jesus did for him. Jesus bore our sins, bearing the cost of them. So why didn't God just forgive? Well, we see now that no one just forgives. Forgiveness involves a cost. It involves absorbing a penalty for the one who has harmed you. On the cross, we see Jesus doing it visibly and cosmically. What every human being must ultimately do is truly forgive someone like Jesus did. The only way to truly triumph over evil is through suffering. Suffering through forgiveness. Let me remind you that Jesus and God are one. God did not dump the suffering on someone else. He did it himself. The God we worship is fundamentally different than all the primitive gods of other cultures who demanded blood to have their wrath appeased. Rather, our God is the one who became human. He offered his own lifeblood in order to honor moral justice and merciful love, so that one day all of evil can be destroyed. You know, the cross is not just a lovely little example of sacrificial love. Throwing your life away needlessly is not admirable. It's wrong. Jesus' death only has meaning if it was necessary to rescue us. There was a debt to be paid. There is a cost to our sin. And God has paid it. He's absorbed it. The cross of Christ is also an exchange of love. Keller explains it this way. Imagine, if you will, that you meet someone who is innocent, but is being hunted down by secret agents or maybe the government. He or she reaches out to you for help. If you don't help them, they will probably die. But if you help them, someone who is perfectly safe and secure will therefore be in mortal danger with them. That's the plot of every action movie there's ever been, I think. Again, it's the other person or me. They will experience increased security and safety through our investment in them, but only because we assume to enter their insecurity and their vulnerability. That's how love, true love, works. You ask any therapist or counselor who works with emotionally vulnerable people, and they will tell you that you never exit a relationship without being emotionally drained yourself. You give of yourself to help the other person. You know, parents do that all the time. You know, children come into this world completely dependent on other people. Parents have to give up much of their energy, resources, time, their emotional strength to care and nurture for their children or grandchildren. Not to mention their freedom, unless you have a good nanny or maybe grandparents nearby. If you only care for your children when it's convenient for you, they will grow up emotionally needy, very troubled. In parenting, it's either you or your children. The cross demonstrates the truth that God gives his strength to meet our weakness. John Stott, in his book, The Cross of Christ, writes that that this substitution is at the very heart of the Christian message. He writes this, "The essence of sin is we human beings substituting ourselves for God. Well, the essence of salvation is God substituting himself for us. We put ourselves where only God deserves to be. God puts himself where we deserve to be." If God is truly a God of love, then how can he not become personally involved in the suffering of violence and oppression and grief and weakness and pain that we all experience? The answer is he can. And Christianity is the only world religion that claims that God does that. Jesus in the cross suffers for us and he suffers with us. Jesus voluntarily took the place beside those who felt powerless before those who sought to oppress and harm them. On the cross, Jesus wins through losing. He triumphs through defeat. He achieves power through weakness, and service comes to wealth by becoming poor. In other words, he just gives it away. So why did Jesus have to die? Even Jesus kind of asked that question in the Garden of Gethsemane when he asked, "Is there not another way?" But there wasn't. And Jesus ultimately accepted that fact. On the cross, he cried out in agony, "Why? Why am I forsaken?" Was it necessary? The answer we discover from the Bible is that Jesus died on the cross for us.